kids. Hey, come in here right now. Come on, cuz it's time for...
Big John!
And Sparky!
Hello again, and here we go again, with another hour of stories and songs for the younger generation and the young at heart. Hi, this is Big John, and Sparky, the little elf from the land of make-believe who wants more than anything else in the world to be a real boy, is right here with me. Yes, sir, once again, from San Francisco, California, within sight of the Golden Gate, it's time for the biggest party in the world, because it goes all the way around the world. Time for Big John and Sparky and No School Today. Sparky, not to search around for an unusual way to start the program today, but going back to the old reliable, I have a riddle for you.
Yeah, well, okay.
It's from Rebecca Ann Hensley.
Rebecca Ann Hensley.
Uh-huh.
You know, where does Rebecca Ann live?
Roswell, New Mexico.
How about that? All the way from New Mexico, huh? Okay, what is it?
All right, this is the riddle. What is no larger, rather? What is no larger when it weighs 5 pounds than when it weighs 1 pound?
What is no larger when it weighs 5 pounds than when it weighs 1 pound?
Right.
What is no larger when it weighs 5 pounds than when it weighs 1 pound?
Right.
Well, I don't think there is such a thing. Mayor, what do you think?
I don't know.
Weighs 5 pounds.
Don't know.
It's no larger than when it weighs 1 pound. What do you think?
Don't know.
Well, Big John, I don't think there is any such thing.
Oh, yes, there is, Sparky. You just think about it for a while.
Okay, I'll think about it, but boy, that's really got me stumped.
Yes, this is a good one.
Listen to the hits in on the
all puffer bellies, all in a row. All right, Big John, I'm ready if you are. You all set to hear about the very latest thrilling and exciting chapter in our favorite serial movie, General Comet of the Universe Patrol?
Oh, yes, I guess so. I've been waiting anxiously all week.
Fine. It was very well worth your time waiting for, too, Big John. Yes, sir, real fine.
Yes, indeedy, Buster. I have to agree with the fellers on that. Tell Big John about Chapter 441, lad.
Okay. Now, I suppose you recall how Chapter 440 ended last week, don't you, Big John?
Oh, how could I possibly forget, ever? There was a swarm of beetles about to attack the Earth.
Yeah, those were the biddly beetles.
Yes, and as these biddly beetles approached the Earth, another swarm of beetles...
Boodly beetles.
Yeah, that's right. A swarm of boodly beetles suddenly appeared and attacked the swarm of biddly beetles. And both swarms of beetles, the biddlies and the boodlies, were so dense that they completely blocked off the rays of the sun, and the entire Earth was thrown into total and complete darkness.
That's right.
In fact, it even got cold. And with the battle of the biddly and the boodly beetles lasting several days, a new ice age had come upon the Earth.
That's right. Fine. 100% correct. Give Big John the tin-plated overcoat there.
Yes, sir. Big John, yes, sir. In fact, as Chapter 440 ended, the Earth was already covered with a thick blanket of snow, and it was 110 degrees below zero, with the snow still falling. So, as Chapter 440 ended, Professor Nuclear observed, "We are doomed to be covered entirely with the snow. Already it is too cold for us to escape. All is lost, General Comet. All is lost."
And so as Chapter 441 started, Big John, what do you think?
I haven't the faintest idea. What?
It was still snowing.
And General Comet was saying, "What do you mean all is lost? Don't you realize that the Universe Patrol doesn't know the meaning of the word defeat? And since I am Commander-in-Chief of the Universe Patrol, I, above all, do not know the meaning of the word defeat." And then General Comet walked over to his desk. "Where are you going, General?" Professor Nuclear asked. To which General Comet answered, "To get my dictionary. I'm looking up the meaning of the word defeat."
Oh, for goodness sakes. Hey, what a joker that General Comet is, huh? Nice sense of humor.
Yeah, fine. Say, did I ever tell you about the rather amazing and highly interesting incident involving old Charlie Rustflaw of the dictionary?
Oh, for goodness sakes now, Yuki. Don't tell me we're going off on another old Charlie Rustflaw binge. For pity's sakes, Yuki, just hush up. Ain't nobody who wants to hear anything about old Charlie Rustflaw.
Fine. It all started back during the summer of 1936. The Garbage Collector Society of North, South, and Central America, known as the GCSNSCA, was having their annual picnic at Guggenheimer's Farm, just outside of Slurp Soup, South Carolina. Old Charlie attended all these functions, being rather active in the Garbage Collector Society of North, South, and Central America, as he was, and he got wind of the fact that there was going to be a prize for the garbage collector with the biggest vocabulary. Now, vocabulary, Sparky Lad, means the many different words that you know the meaning of. You know, words such as the likes of if, and, but, the, oh, all, and so on and so forth, don't you know?
Yeah. I know, Yuki.
Yeah, fine. Well, sir, don't you know, it was just like old Charlie Rustflaw to make up his mind he was going to win the prize. So what do you think he went and did? What do you think he did, Big John?
I don't know.
I ask you, Big John, what do you think old Charlie Rustflaw went and did?
Once again, Yuki, I haven't the faintest idea. What did he went and do, or go and do?
He took and went and bought himself the biggest dictionary he could find. And he took it with him everywhere he went, even whilst he was driving his garbage wagon. Read the half-wit dictionary from cover to cover and memorized every word in it. Old Charlie Rustflaw was convinced he had the biggest vocabulary of any garbage collector in North, South, and Central America. So what do you think happened on the day of the picnic?
Well, he didn't win because the contest was for people with the biggest vocabulary of Spanish words or something like that.
No, siree. No, old Charlie Rustflaw won the contest. He won the prize. What do you think it was, Big John? What do you think the prize was?
I don't know. What was it?
A dictionary.
Oh, for goodness sakes. Continue with the serial movie there, Sparky lad.
Fine. Won the dictionary contest. Very fine.
General Comet was shouting in all directions. Defeat, he shouted. There is no such word. Come on, we're going outside to the rocket port and climb into a rocket ship and escape to another planet where it's warmer. And so Big John, outside into the blizzard they went. As they passed an object standing in the middle of the rocket ship landing strip, General Comet said, Jumping Jupiter! Why in the universe did the people of this town put up a statue of the milkman in the middle of our rocket ship landing field? To which Professor Nuclear answered,
That's no statue, General. That there is the milkman. He froze in his tracks whilst he was delivering milk to the Universe Patrol mess hall. And as they walked along, General Comet muttered to himself,
yeah.
I kind of thought that was a rather remarkable likeness.
Must have been pretty cold to freeze the milkman in his tracks. Well, so then what?
Well, Buster, the General and the Professor made their way to the nearest rocket ship.
As they neared a rocket ship, General Comet gasped, By George! Take a look at that! All the rocket ships are already half buried in the ice and snow. Oh, well, when we blast off, the fire that shoots out of the tail of the rocket ship will melt the ice. But their ice and snow won't give us any trouble.
It will if we don't hurry up and get inside that rocket ship. This snow has fallen pretty thick and fast, says the Professor.
And so, into the rocket ship they went. First, we'll have to warm up the rocket engines, General Comet said as he pushed the starter button. The engines turned over right away and hummed steadily as they warmed up.
I don't want to be a wet blanket, says Professor Nuclear, but just take a look at the altimeter. That's that little dial on the control panel that tells how high up in the air we are.
General Comet gave Professor Nuclear a puzzled look. Why do I want to look at the altimeter? We aren't even off the ground. How can it show me how high up in the air we are? Then General Comet's eyes got as wide as sewer lids. Jumping Jupiter, he gasped. Hey, according to this here altimeter, we're 1 mile underground. To which Professor Nuclear nodded calmly.
Right, and we are 1 mile underground, or I should say, 1 mile under ice and snow. Because already a pile of snow 1 mile high has covered us. It'll be impossible for us to blast off.
Impossible? General Comet screamed. I told you I don't know the meaning of the word impossible. I'm blasting off right now.
Get the dictionary.
And he pressed the blast-off button on the control panel, and the rocket engine sputtered, and he pressed the button again, and this time, Big John, the rocket ship engine stopped.
I told you it would be impossible for us to blast off, Professor Nuclear says. We're under 1 mile of ice. The entire planet Earth is covered with a pile of ice 1 mile high, and it's getting thicker by the minute.
It certainly is.
How's that?
Never mind, go on.
General Comet, farewell. We are doomed. There is no escape this time. All is lost.
To which General Comet said,
Uh-oh. And as he did, Chapter 441 ended, Big John. That's a pretty fine mess there, don't you think?
Yes.
We dedicate this number to the men of the Universe Patrol. Those men that fly when they can thaw out the ship. The United States Air Force Band.
Oh,
butterfly dedicated to the men of the United States Air Force and offered for us there by the performers in the Air Force Band. Sparky, do you have the answer to that riddle that Rebecca Ann Hensley sent us from Roswell, New Mexico?
Yeah, the one about what is no larger when it weighs 5 pounds than when it weighs 1 pound.
Yeah, that's it. What is no larger when it weighs 5 pounds than when it weighs 1 pound?
Well, I do not know.
You give up, huh?
Yes, Big John, I am forced to confess. I give up.
It's a pair of scales.
A pair of scales?
That's right. A pair of scales is no larger when it weighs 5 pounds than when it weighs 1 pound.
Yeah. Oh, why didn't I think of that?
Just didn't happen. Rin Tin Tin
Lieutenant
story.
Rip Master speaking. Officer of the 101st Cavalry stationed at Fort Apache. You know, one of our jobs is patrol duty. And when we patrol, we never know what we'll run into. Like today, Rusty Rennie and I were patrolling the fringes of the Apache Reservation. And we had stopped by a little stream to water our horses.
Hey, Rip, what's bothering Rennie?
I don't know, Rusty. He's warning us about something. Hand me my binoculars.
He seems to be looking down into the valley. Here's your binoculars, Rip.
Yeah, it's an Indian riding a pinto. He's coming this way.
Must be a renegade.
An Apache carrying a rifle. A Marlin repeater.
Gosh, another one?
That's the fifth one I've seen in the hands of an Indian this week. I'd sure love to get my mitts on the trader that's selling them those guns. It means trouble. Keep low, Rusty. Here he comes. Okay, engine. Off your horse and keep your hands up. Now, hand me that gun.
Rip, watch out. He's got a knife. Eddie's ready, Eddie's. Serve you right, engine, for pulling that knife.
Pick up his rifle, Rusty.
Gosh, Rip, it's all slippery with grease. Whew, does it smell?
Grease. That's very interesting. It means he hasn't even used it yet.
How do you figure that, Rip?
Well, you see, soldier, guns are packed and shipped all greased to keep them from rusting. He hasn't even had a chance to clean it. Maybe he got it today, maybe an hour ago for all we know. Where'd you get it, engine? See? Gun. Where'd you get it? Talk! We'll never get anything out of him. Okay, engine, on your horse. Vamos!
I bet you Rennie could find out where he got that rifle, Rip. I bet you.
Now, Rusty, Rennie's a great dog, that I'll admit, but I'm tarnation you expect him to...
You'll see. Hand me the rifle. I'll show you.
Okay, soldier. Here, carry on.
Rennie, here, boy. Sniff, Rennie. Sniff this rifle. I don't blame you, Rennie. It smells awful. Remember, Rennie, next time you smell this, bark like this. Ruff! Ruff! Ruff, ruff! Now, Rennie, take another sniff. A good sniff and bark. Oh, come on, Rennie. Don't be a sissy. The smell won't kill you. Sniff. Good boy, Rennie. Good boy.
Hi, Rusty. Evening, Lieutenant.
Hiya, Biff.
Hi, Sergeant O'Hara.
I see you made it back to the fort just in time for chow.
Golly, I'm so hungry. I could eat a whole buffalo, hide horns and all.
What are you grinning about, Sergeant?
Well, sir, it's a... it's a kind of surprise for Rusty here.
A surprise? For me?
Yeah, Rusty. Your, school teacher is here.
My what?
Oh, Mr. Bailey arrived, huh, Sergeant?
Yes, sir. He came in about an hour ago. That's his wagon over there.
Rip, what's this all about, a school teacher?
Were you going to learn your reading, writing, and arithmetic, Rusty? And it's high time, too.
Oh, shucks, Rip.
Now, look, soldier. You want to be a cavalry officer someday, don't you?
Yes, but...
Well, how do you ever expect to be an officer if you can't even read the military manual?
The lieutenant has sure got you there, Rusty.
I guess you're right, Rip. But how come he came here just to teach me?
Well, I saw him in Salt River last week and asked him to spend a little time here at the post.
Thanks, partner.
He's a circuit teacher, Rusty. Travels around from settlement to settlement and spends a little time in each.
Here he comes now, Lieutenant.
Good evening. Good evening, Lieutenant Masters.
Good evening, Mr. Bailey. Sure nice of you to come so soon, sir.
Well, glad to do it, sir. Glad to do it. Now, this, I presume, is my little pupil.
Little? Well,
my... At ease, soldier.
Yes, sir.
Oh, this is your very own dog. Am I right?
Yes, sir. His name was Rin Tin Tin.
A magnificent beast indeed. Eh? Oh, well, he wants to sniff me.
I guess Rennie's getting his signals mixed. Hey, Rusty?
Rennie never gets his signals mixed, Rip.
Yeah, maybe you're right, son. You do travel around quite a bit, don't you, Mr. Bailey?
Eh? Oh, yes. Yes, indeed.
You'll mind if I look in your wagon, Mr. Bailey?
My wagon? Oh, I don't understand, sir.
Well, perhaps you don't, but I think Rennie does. Stand by, Sergeant O'Hara, while Rusty and I have a look.
Yes, sir.
Gosh, Rip, you think the school teacher...
Lieutenant, Bailey's taking your horse.
Halt, Bailey! Halt or I'll shoot.
Don't shoot, Rip. Rennie will take care of him.
Call him off! Get this dog off me!
At ease, Rennie! At ease!
Stand guard over him, Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
Now, Rusty, let's have a look. What's in this packing case under the straw? Guffey Readers, it says.
You know, Rip, I don't think Rennie can read. He doesn't believe it.
No, nor do I. Hand me that axe over there, Rusty. Rifles. Marlin repeaters. That's where the Indians have been getting. You know, Rusty, I think your education is going to be delayed for a spell. Because Mr. Bailey is going to be spending quite a spell in the federal prison.
Rennie boy, come here. I'm going to give you one big kiss. You saved my life again.
Rin Tin Tin stories always winds up kissing the dog. Well, guess that's better than kissing the girl.
I guess.
It's inspection time now, but hey, it really is, too. Big John, have you got your spyglass out?
Yes.
Okay, well, get ready for inspection then, boys and girls, because we got this big contest on. The girls are still ahead. I'm going to keep score. Where's my pencil? Where's my paper? Where's my pencil? Where's
here
my scorecard?
Here you are. Here you are.
Oh, what did I do with
here,
it?
Here.
I got my score pad. And I got my pencil, too. So, I'll keep track of the score, and I'll report to you as soon as Big John is through inspecting. Okay? Okay.
All right, now, we'll have to do this rapidly today because I don't have much time for inspection. Cleanliness inspection first. Let's see. All the parts of you are supposed to be clean. Your hands, face, ears, and neck, and... Okay, very good. Oh, listen, part of good grooming includes clean hair, too. Now, just because you put a lot of hair goop on your hair, fellas, and try to plaster it down, that will build up after a while, you know, all that goop on there, and you should wash your hair regularly, too. And that means wash it with shampoo and then rinse it good. And especially if you have a hair rinse of some kind, then your grooming is really a lot easier. Okay, now let's see the... let's take a look at your room while we're at it here. Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. You know, the girls are 3 points ahead as we started today's program because they've been doing pretty good here. lately. And your room looks a lot better today, boys. Yes, indeed. Well, looks like you took my advice and asked Mom to show you how to clean up. You know, there are a lot of young people, boys and girls, that really don't know how to clean their room properly. They try to and they want to, but it's not good by adult standards, so they have to be shown. So you ask Mom, and she'll show you a couple times, and she'll be mighty happy and proud if you can learn that lesson quickly. Let me look at the bathroom, too. All right. Very good. Fine. All right. Now, those of you who have regular chores, hold up your hand if you've been doing them regularly, faithfully, without being told. if you have to be told, that takes 1 point off your score. All right. I told you this was going to be short today, so Sparky, let's figure out the score here. Ready?
All right. Now, let's take a look at this. You realize that the girls are 3 points ahead. Here is the boys' score. Add these scores up. We start with a number 82. That's our starting base. 82 plus two more.
84.
Plus one.
85.
Plus three.
88.
Plus one.
89.
Plus four.
93.
Plus two equals
95.
Not bad. 95. All right, now the girls. I start out with 82. Okay, girls, 82. Plus one.
83.
Plus one.
84.
Plus one.
85.
Plus one.
86.
Plus two.
88.
Plus one.
89.
Wowee, did the boys ever win today? 95 minus 89 is 6. The boys win by 6 today. Hey, how does that figure out with last week's score, Big John?
Well, last week, you know, the girls were 3 points ahead. Today, the boys win by 6. Imagine that, 6. So now the boys are 3 points ahead of the girls. Well, congratulations, fellas. Congratulations.
15 men on the dead man's chest. Yo, ho, ho, and a bottle of rum. Drink and the devil have come for the rest. Yo, ho, ho, and a bottle of rum.
Our feature story today, boys and girls, is about pirates and buried treasure. An adventure on the high seas. It's the story by Robert Louis Stevenson. Treasure Island, told by the fellow that it happened to, Jim Hawkins.
I think it was Dr. Livesey who first suggested I write down the full particulars about Treasure Island. Jim Hawkins, he said to me, you're a bright lad. It would be a shame if you weren't to set down on paper all the events that befell us for others to read. So I have done just that, trying to remember it all. When I think back to the Admiral Benbow Inn, where my father was landlord before he died, I first remember Billy Bones and his sea chest. You see, Billy Bones had always been a mysterious boarder in our inn who seemed to harbor a deep secret. When he died very suddenly of a heart seizure, my mother and I went through his personal effects. In his sea chest, we discovered a pouch wrapped in oilskin. My mother immediately sent me to our good friend, Dr. Livesey.
Did Billy Bones tell you what was in this pouch, Jim?
No, sir, but he once mentioned something about a treasure belonging to a Captain Flint.
Captain Flint?
You know him, sir?
I knew of him, the bloodthirstiest buccaneer to sail the seven seas. Well, let us have a look at the pouch and see what it is that Billy Bones guarded so jealously.
In the pouch was a map of an island. Under a hill, in the center of it, were three red crosses. And beside the last cross were the words, Bulk of Treasure Here. This was Billy Bones' secret. A buried treasure. Dr. Livesey and his friend, Squire Trelawney, made plans to charter a boat and sail for the island shown on the map. And I was to accompany them as a cabin boy. Only the three of us would know the purpose of the voyage. Now we needed a crew, so Dr. Livesey gave me a note which I was to deliver to a certain John Silver. I found him at the Spyglass Tavern. I knew him at once from the description the doctor had given me. He had a pegged leg, but he was a tall and strong man, and he had a face as big as a ham. Plucking up my courage, I approached him. Mr. Silver, sir?
Hi, matey. Such is my name. And who might you be?
Jim Hawkins, sir. I have a letter from Dr. Livesey.
Dr. Livesey? Give it here, lad. So, you're to be our cabin boy, eh?
Yes, sir.
Well, now, I'm happy to meet you, Jim, lad. And I can tell you right off to trot back to the good old doctor and tell him Long John Silver will have a crew for him in 2 weeks' time like he's never seen before.
Long John Silver kept his word. In 2 weeks, we were ready to sail. Our captain was a man named Smollett, and when Dr. Livesey, Squire Trelawney, and I boarded the boat, which was named the Hispaniola, we learned from Captain Smollett that he, and undoubtedly the entire crew, already knew not only the purpose of our voyage, but that we also had a map of the island showing where a treasure was buried. Who could have talked so freely, we did not know. But the damage was done, and we could only hope that it would lead to no trouble. Several days out, after doing my work, I thought I would like an apple, and I climbed into the big apple barrel, which was on deck. But what with my being tired after a day's work and the gentle rocking of the Hispaniola, I fell asleep. And I didn't waken until I heard voices just outside the barrel. One belonged to John Silver, the other to Israel Hans, the coxswain. I remained inside and listened.
Flint was captain, he was, and I was quartermaster.
And was it on that voyage that he buried the gold?
Yes, it was, Marty. While we waited on the boat. And 2 months later, he was dead. And soon, Marty, it'll be ours. That's why we're here, sailing on the Hispaniola. Me and what's left of Flint's crew.
Now at last I knew the truth. Long John Silver and the crew he had brought together were all pirates. As soon as I was able, I relayed to Dr. Livesey and Captain Smollett all I had heard, thus putting us on our guard against the buccaneers. The rest of the voyage continued without incident. Then came the morning when the lookout shouted,
"Land ho!"
The Hispaniola put in at a cove of Skeleton Island, which we had come to call Treasure Island. Once the Hispaniola lay at anchor, Captain Smollett decided to allow some of the crew to go ashore. 6 men, including the doctor, the squire, and I, would remain on board, while 13 went ashore with John Silver. We knew he would keep them in line. I wanted so much to go ashore with him, so while the boats were being lowered, I slipped unnoticed into one of them and hid under the canvas. So began my unbelievable adventure. Once ashore, I slid out into the sand and ran as fast as my legs could carry me into the jungle of trees. For hours, I wandered about the island, wondering where the treasure might be buried. Then, as I entered a clearing in the trees, I froze in sudden terror. There in the clearing stood an old man with a long white beard, his skin burned by the sun. He was dressed in tatters. We stood eyeing each other, and it was difficult to tell who was more frightened. The sound of a bird broke the spell. Who are you?
I'm poor Ben Gunn, I am. And I haven't spoken to a living being these past 3 years.
3 years? Were you shipwrecked?
Marooned, Marty. Abandoned. To live on berries and oysters and goat. How are you called, Marty?
Jim. Jim Hawkins, sir.
Sir? You're a lad of good upbringing, Jim. And if I take a liking to you, it could be worth your while. Come here to find Flint's treasure, did you?
How did you know?
Ben Gunn knew Long John Silver would find some way to come back for it. We were in Flint's crew together when he left the old walrus to bury the treasure.
Is that when you were marooned?
No, that happened 3 years back when I brought a ship here to search for the treasure. 12 days we searched. But the treasure was well hid. Then my shipmates handed me a spade, a pickaxe, and a musket. Yeah, they said, you can look for Flint's treasure yourself. Then off they sailed, leaving old Ben Gunn alone on this desolate island.
And did you ever find...
What? What was that?
They're firing from the Hispaniola. Come on! The cannon shots we heard were from the ship. Captain Smollett, the squire, and a few of the faithful hands had taken a second small boat to the island, and now were being fired upon by the pirates left on the Hispaniola. Ben Gunn and I hid in the brush and could see their boat capsize, but then we saw them wading ashore carrying their stores and provisions. Luckily, they found a stockade and were able to take cover there. I urged Ben Gunn to come with me to join them there, but he would not come. He pointed out a small boat he had built himself and hidden in a small cove. He told me I could always find him nearby. I was warmly welcomed in the stockade, having been given up for dead. I told everyone about my encounter with Ben Gunn. With the coming of night, the shooting ceased. The following morning, we were surprised to see John Silver stumping across the sand toward the stockade carrying a white flag. Captain Smollett, suspecting a trick, warned us to stay inside. Then he called out the window.
Stand, or we fire.
It's Captain Silver, sir. To come on board and make terms.
I know no Captain Silver.
The poor lads you deserted chose me, Captain, sir. We're willing to submit the terms, and no bones about it.
What are your terms?
We want the treasure, and we'll have it. We know you have a chart showing the location. Give it to us, and we'll give you a choice, we will.
What choice?
Once we've loaded the treasure, come aboard the Hispaniola, and I give you my affidavit, we'll set you ashore somewhere. Or you can stay right here, and we'll see that a ship comes back to pick you up. I give you my affidavit on that, too.
Is that your final word?
My very last one.
Then hear mine. If you and the others will come up unarmed, I'll see you have a fair trial when we're back in England. You have no other choice, for we do not intend to give you the map, without which you will never find the treasure. And I give you my affidavit on that.
Muttering curses at us, Silver returned to where his men were waiting, and within the hour the shooting had resumed. It was a bloody fight, and when at last John Silver and his men disappeared into the woods, we took count of our casualties. We had lost 3 men to their 5. The doctor tended to the wounded and then went off to look for Ben Gunn. I decided this was the time to take Ben Gunn's boat and go back to the Hispaniola for more ammunition and supplies. I took a pistol with me, slipped out of the stockade, and made my way to the small cove where the boat was waiting for me. When I came aboard the Hispaniola, I began to look for the pirate on watch I was certain Silver had left behind. Then I saw them. The one called Red Cap and Israel Hands. I did not need a second look to see Red Cap was dead. Israel Hands lay against the bulwark, and with every roll of the ship, his head swayed from side to side. I could not tell if he was dead. I ran to his side. I bent over him and shook his shoulder. Mr. Hands, sir.
It's you, matey.
There's blood on your shirt. Are you all right?
A slight wound. Red Cap there came at me with a knife. I had to run him through.
Lie quietly. I'll fetch you some rum.
Thank you, matey. You're a good lad.
I hurried below, and searching the galley, I found an unopened bottle of rum, which I took back up to Israel Hands. The rum revived him and brought him to his full senses.
Thank you, matey. Thank you. What brought you here, lad?
I've come aboard to take possession of the ship, and you'll please regard me as your captain until further notice.
Aye, Captain.
As soon as I strike Mr. Silver's colors, which fly from the mast, I shall sail the Hispaniola around to the north end of the island and beach her in the inlet.
And now that we're underway, Captain, a question.
Aye, Mr. Hands.
What are your intentions regarding myself?
Since you were one of the mutineers and have had a part in killing, I shall turn you over to Captain Smollett for proper punishment.
And just how do you intend to do that, Captain?
I am hoping, Mr. Hands, that there is a spark of honor in you and that you will accompany me peacefully. At that moment, a sudden breeze whipped the mainsail about and I turned my back on Israel Hands to tighten a line. When I faced about again, he was halfway across the deck, coming at me with a dagger in his hand.
Nobody's turning in Israel Hands for no proper punishment, they ain't. Least of all you, Captain Orc.
Hands lunged at me, but I leaped to one side and his knife whistled by my ear. In his weakened condition, he was not as quick as I, and I had all the deck to dodge about him. Time after time, he lunged at me, but each time I was quick to move out of the way. Then, as the Hispaniola suddenly came about, the boom struck Hands and threw him to the deck, giving me enough time to jump on the rail and clamber up the shrouds in the mizzenmast. I stopped only when I had reached the lookout perch. When I looked down, I discovered Hands had revived himself, and with his dirk between his teeth, was slowly making his way up toward me. I quickly pulled from my belt the pistol I had taken from the blockhouse. One more step, Mr. Hands, and I'll fire. Suddenly he stopped and took the dirk from between his teeth.
All right, matey. Looks like you have me at a disadvantage. I give myself over to you.
For a moment, I believed his words. And then, as I took my eyes from him, he suddenly threw his dirk at me. The blade pierced the skin of my arm, pinning me to the mast. As Hans started toward me again, I managed to point my pistol at him and fired. With a cry, he let go of the rigging and plunged headfirst into the water. I managed to pull the dirk from the mast and discovered I had suffered only a flesh wound. I scrambled back down to the deck and once more set the Hispaniola's course for the North Inlet. When at last I reached my destination, night had fallen. And as I set out along the beach, I looked forward with happy anticipation to my reunion with Dr. Livesey and the others in the stockade. But when I reached the stockade and threw open the door, I was greeted by an unexpected voice.
Well, now, look here, my friends. If it isn't our young friend Jim Hawkins, welcome aboard, lad.
Where's Captain Smollett and Dr. Livesey and the others?
Where they went, nobody knows. But look here, lad. They left us the treasure map.
Did you murder them?
Murder them? Now, matey, is that the way you think of your friend John Silver? I'm telling you, they walked out of here, leaving us the stockade, provisions, map, and all. And if you want your share of the treasure, lad, then pick up a shovel, for we're on our way to follow the map and find our fortunes.
I had no choice but to join the pirates. And for some reason, I felt that Silver, villain though he was telling me the truth. So we began to follow the map indicating where the treasure was buried. Carefully, we followed the directions and at last came to a thicket grove.
Look sharp, my heart is. Beyond the thicket there. That's where we'll find what we came after.
Like madmen, the buccaneers surged forward, their hands reaching for the hidden treasure even before it was found. Then suddenly, their shouts died on their lips. And we all stood and looked in astonishment at what lay before us. A great excavation in the ground, and not recently made, for the sides had fallen in and grass grew in the bottom. As for any signs of the buried treasure, all that remained were a few pieces of gold and a bit of planking with a faded word, Walrus, on it. I cannot describe the anger of the men. Their faces were livid with rage. Tom Morgan, a terrifying-looking pirate with a patch over one eye, turned on John Silver and me, growling.
This is your treasure, John Silver. Mark my words, mate. Silver here knew all along there weren't no treasure buried here. He brought us here for nothing. And the kid that stole Flint's map in the first place. They're in it together. Let's get him!
With a shout, Morgan and the others rushed towards Silver and me. But as they did, three musket shots flashed out of the thicket. Morgan fell headfirst into the excavation. One of the others spun around and fell dead. The other three turned around and ran as quickly as they could. At that moment, Dr. Livesey, Squire Trelawney, and Ben Gunn emerged from the trees, their muskets still smoking. ¶¶ It was then I learned the whole story. It was Ben Gunn who found the treasure and removed it 3 years before. The doctor knew this when he left the map with John Silver in the stockade, and he and the others went to join Ben Gunn. It took us 3 days to load the treasure onto the Hispaniola. Food and provisions were left in the stockade for the three buccaneers who were still alive somewhere on the island. Old Ben Gunn decided to go with us, and John Silver agreed to return to England also, when Dr. Livesey promised he would have a fair trial. But when we had raised anchor and sailed out of the cove, we discovered that somehow Silver had slipped away from the Hispaniola, and with him went a few hundred coins from the treasure, no doubt to help him on his further wanderings. So the narrative of my adventures on Treasure Island has come to an end. Of Long John Silver, I've heard no more. But on a still night, as I lie in my bed at the Admiral Benbow Inn, I seem to hear Long John Silver's voice floating up from the breaking waves beneath my window.
15 men on a great man's chest. Yo ho ho, there's a bottle of rum. Drink them, the devil has come for the rest. Yo ho.
Our feature story for today, Robert Louis Stevenson's Treasure Island, told by the feller that it all happened to, Jim Hawkins.
And that was a Mercury Storyteller record.
This next bit of music is by Uncle Lumpy.
Why do you say that?
Well, if I don't say it now, I'll never get a chance to announce. This is your genial disc jockey, Baby Lee, and I'm introducing Uncle Lumpy, Uncle Lumpy.
Well, now, once upon a time, little old Orly, he's out a-driving with his nanny goat and red wagon, and all of a sudden, a wheel come off. Well, sir, he'd no sooner got out to fix it till the nanny goat ran away. And just then it started to rain. Well, sir, he is disgusted and he is mad. And he says, oh, my goodness, double whiz fish. Well, he no sooner said it than he heard a voice.
What's the matter, friend?
Orly, he looked around, and there's a big old pink bird sitting on a branch and grinning at him. Orly says, I got lots of troubles, bird. Old bird grins at him again, and he says,
I am the happy bird. If you just listen to me, I will make you happy. Just sing a happy little song. When every little thing goes wrong, be as happy as can be. Just fill yourself with glee when every little thing goes wrong.
Well, Orly says, I don't see how that'll stop the rain or bring back my nanny, but I'll try it.
Ha, 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 hee, 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 I'm just as happy as I can be, 'cause I lost a wheel, my nanny ran away, it rained and rained and it rained all day. So ha, 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 hee, 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 I'm just as happy as I can be.
And he did feel a little bit better. But just then, Dingle Jolly come a-sloshing along through the rain.
Well, duh, Orly, he says. What you so happy about? Oh, Orly says, I lost a wheel, my nanny goat run away, and it rained all over me. I sure am happy.
Dingle, he looks at him, and he says,
well, duh, don't make sense to me. I lost Pa's boots in the river, tore my overhauls, I'm gonna get a licking, and I just ain't happy.
Just then, the happy bird stuck his head around the tree, and he says,
aha, my young friend, laugh, sing when trouble comes, sing.
Well, duh, Dingle says, I'll try it, but I'll bet you I'll be a-singing with Pa beating time on the seat of my britches. Ha, 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 and yuck, 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 I'm just as happy as an old wet duck. I lost Pa's boots in the fishing hole, in my overhauls I tore a big hole. So chuckle, 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 and a giggle, 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 I'm so happy I can hardly wiggle. Well, when he finished, Orly says, ain't you happy now? And Dingle, he says, well, I can't say I am. That happy bird must be crazy. Well, when he heard this, the happy bird started dancing up and down on the tree branch.
Oh, no, 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 he says. You must be happy when trouble comes. Keep smiling, laugh, be gay, and sing. Oh, my, oh, my, oh, my, we must all be happy.
Well, sir, he got so excited that he got one toe caught on a twig, tripped himself, and fell off from the tree right into a mud puddle.
Oh, my goodness, double whiz fish and fiddlesticks, he says.
Well, do now, Dingle says. Where's your song? You got to sing when trouble comes, you know.
Oh, well, says a happy bird. All right. Just sing happy little song. Whenever the thing goes wrong, these hops can be and fill us up with whenever little thing goes wrong.
Well, sir, just then the nanny goat come a-galloping back and ran right over the happy bird.
Oh, my, says a happy bird. Nothing but trouble.
Well, Orly, he looks at him and he says, ain't you forgetting your happy little song? Happy bird peeks at him, waggles his beak a couple times to see if it still works, and starts to sing.
Just sing a happy little song whenever little thing goes wrong. Oh, go on home and leave me alone.
And that's just what Dingle and Orly did. And Orly says it's easy for happy birds to tell folks to be happy when they're in trouble, but most happy birds feel a little bit different about their own troubles. That's all.
I guess that's what the girls will be trying to imitate the happy bird. unless they can come up with 3 points for next week's inspection time, Big John.
What's the matter?
Look at the time. Look at the time.
Oh, well, here. It's almost time for us to leave. But, Mayor, I'm wondering if you could give us a little preview of what our next week's feature story will be.
Well, Big John, I'm not going to act out anything, but I'll give you a little hint. There's a story, it's one of the 1001 tales from the Arabian Nights, you know. A story about a feller that inherited the lamp, and every time he rubbed it, why, this here genie popped out, and did whatever he wanted to do, you know.
I dream of genie with the light brown hair.
No, that's a song.
No, it's a TV program. I dream of genie.
What would you go and give for somebody like that, Big John? I don't know. Let's get out of here.
Thanks just a whole lot for listening today, boys and girls. Thanks a lot. Boy, oh boy, if we couldn't spend this time with you each week, well, we'd miss you. Yeah, so until we meet again, same time, same station, same place, this is little old Sparky saying goodbye and over and out, and so long for a while, just a little while.
Yeah, just a little while. Until next week, when, Lord willing, we'll be with you again with another program of stories and songs for the younger generation and the young in heart. This is Big John, Mayor Plumpfront, Yuki Butcher, and Sparky. And I say, from all of us to all of you, the best of everything that's good, and may all your good dreams come true. Bye.
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.